Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Live from the satanic palatial, underground bunker flat sort of thing that we got built down here with, American flags covered in pentagrams strewn about the walls and stuff. I'm just joking, of course. I'm not. Never mind. My very special guest is Suzanne Poisel. Welcome to the program. Actually, we're being hacked. That's right. There is a global hack going on. And we're being affected by it as we speak, ladies and gentlemen. As we speak. I'm not connected to the studio right now. Those of you who are listening to this on the archive section will probably just go like, okay, that was weird. Something's going on. We'll be right back after the technical issues are resolved.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
What the heck? Okay, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. On this most auspicious of occasions, where you can all be comforted that you're not the only one being hacked. Everyone's being hacked, isn't it?
I'm being hacked. Everyone is being hacked. There's a huge global DDoS going on, a fight between Spam House and Cyber Bunker. And I have an article that I put together about it. It's going out tomorrow because my website's down today.
Or maybe you'll give us a sneak preview right here.
Well, what's happening is Spam House is in Germany or Switzerland. You know what? I can't remember right now. Anyway,
it's irrelevant.
It's probably... They are a policing agency, and if one of their customers reports another website as a spam, then they put it on their blacklist, and Cyber Bunker was put on their blacklist, so they got upset, and now there's this massive DDoS going out. They're attacking servers and hosts and things like that. My website is down. Many other websites are down. A friend of mine, Lori's from Lori's Talk News Radio, called me, said, is your site down? I said, yeah. People American on my Freedom Facebook page were like, oh, my God, your site's down. Is the FBI hacking into you? No. Everything's fine. It's everybody else is having a fight.
Yeah, we were joking before the show, you know, it's like, man, it's so comforting that I'm not the only one. It's really comforting that websites are exposing scumbaggery all over the globe, are being hacked and destroyed and taken down, and losing readers and listeners and such, as we very well speak, much like American Freedom Radio, because, you know, like what just happened there. Second, we come into the show talking about how everybody's being hacked and cut-offs and stuff like that, we get hacked and cut off.
It's the beauty. It's the irony of life.
Yeah. I am rather concerned, of course, because, well, in fact, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. I mean, my site's not down, is it? Shoot, let me check.
I don't know.
VinnieEastwoodShow.com, and she's sweet. It's all there. It's all gravy. All right. Well, while you're waiting for your favorite scumbaggery exposer to come back online, why don't you go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and click donate or subscribe or something for like a couple of bucks a month. That'd be very, very nice, because the bank account's kind of, I don't know if anybody's been listening for a long time, but I think it was like last week or the week before. Can't remember exactly which. They all just kind of blew together this year for some reason. 2013 is pretty freaking amazing year so far. My PayPal account was taken down, but now I've got a new one up there, a merchant account and all of that kind of jazz. So if you would kindly, because I had to think about like 75 people or something, cancel the subscription to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And it, like, between $1 and $20 each, that's a massive, it took me years, literally years, to get that many people to subscribe. And I've been able to survive off that and pay the bills and stuff like that. So if you are one of those people who cancelled your subscription, I'm acting under the suspicion that because they're monthly subscribers, they'll just cancel it and then go back to it like a month later and resubscribe or something like that. If so, that's cool. If you just kind of cancelled and then were wondering what the heck is going on, well, the issues are resolved, so you can just go do the PayPal thing again. And the buttons are on the homepage only, of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, right there for your clickety-boo pleasure. So if you would do that, that would be a great favour to me. Thank you very much. Now, speaking of which... Suzanne, you had a massive drop in the amount of readership and advertisers to your website just recently too, didn't you?
Yes.
You don't want to talk about it, do you?
I have also gotten a bunch of new listeners and readers, so everything's fine. You know, when one person walks away, another person walks up. So it's okay.
It's the nature of the beast. Speaking of the beast, I was listening to Kevin Barrett's show just before we came live here, and they're actually passing a law like bill number in the Los Angeles, whatever the frick house of parliamentary frickin' governmental scumbaggery that they've got there, called Bill 666. And incidentally, it's about installing a massive draconian system of red light speed cameras and stuff like that all over Los Angeles or something. And get this, you will not be able to appeal if it tickets you. Like, $500. Okay.
That is incredible. Like,
I'll feed
right
the kids
now.
Next month.
Yeah, right. Right now, as it stands, there's a lot of secondary sources of law that if you get ticketed by a camera, you can absolutely fight that in court. Because what are you going to do? Subpoena the camera to the stand that it saw you? The reason why they have a police officer is because that's the witness to the event in most cases.
Mm. Does a camera not count as a witness, or does somebody actually have to be holding the camera?
No, well, the idea is that there has to be a sentient being observing the incident, and usually they they facilitate that by having a police officer or they go to witnesses and see what happened. But a camera is not sentient. It's a piece of machinery, and it can't vouch for what it saw. There's been plenty of cases where the people were able to show that there's so many glitches in software that cameras are not reliable. I think it was beginning of this year or the end of last year that a judge ruled that city cameras are infringing on their rights, and that there has to be an actual person present. That camera can't just take pictures of your license plate and mail you a ticket. That's not legal anymore.
Wow. I guess they didn't inform the government of California.
Well, California is in bankruptcy, and they're getting all their money from the government, so it would probably be the government.
Yeah. It's like, dudes, you can't pay your bills, man. Why don't you just put up some draconian cameras and stuff and just leech it out of people who can't afford it and get them all to pay $500 tickets, man? You'll be fine. Don't worry. And then just give it to the federal government, and then we'll just give it to the bankers, who will then spend it on military-industrial complex spending, who will then spend it on recruiters to come round in your poor neighborhoods and stuff like that and recruit your children to go and take part in our massive illegal wars. Don't worry, man. It all goes round in a circle and comes back to you in the end.
Here's American Gladiators. Here's American Idol. Go back to sleep.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is television in itself, like there's this new TV show, I think I caught a glimpse of it. It's very similar to American Gladiators / Wipeout or something. I can't remember the name of it. Because I just don't care. And they had these retards like, oh man, I'm gonna win this. I'm so freaking awesome. You're gonna see what I'm gonna do, man. It's just like, what the frick? Oh my God. It's like, how do they recruit these people? It's like, if you are a dumbass who has nothing going in your life, who looks moderately attractive, and can speak like an idiot, we want you on television as an example to the rest of Americans. This is the best you can do. You can be retarded and you can be on television. That is the best frickin' thing that you could ever possibly achieve in your life. And it's just, how many shows are like that? How many shows are like that? I mean, the name Jerry, for example, springs to mind. You know, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. Yeah, but it's actually kind of like a pinnacle of American culture now, beyond like the Jerry Springer show, and be some kind of inbred trailer trash that is now on TV, and then, oh my God, your life is so much better. It doesn't make any sense. Incidentally, speaking of stupid TV shows, I was Googling just the name Vinny to see what would come up. And I'm number two on the Google suggested search results. Number one is a guy named Vinny Guagadino from Jersey Shore. You know,
there you go.
Could the evidence not be any clearer than that?
At least you got on the list.
I'm number two on the list, yeah. You know. Well, Vinny's not a very common name, I don't think. And more to the point, you know, what are the other people called? I don't know. Well, Vinny Jones, though, he's a former football player and stuff like that from England back in the day. He became a movie star. He's in films like Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels and what have you. So if you spell Vinny with an I-E, he comes up number one. But with a Y, I'm number two. And I was just thinking, I want to really be number one. That would be cool. So I was going to ask the listeners, if you're at a computer right now listening to this program, if you're watching it on YouTube on a delayed broadcast or something like that, please go to your Google and search Vinny with a Y, just Vinny with a Y, and see what comes up. And if you see the VinnyEastwoodShow.com there, click on it, and that way it'll tell Google, oh my God, that's the Vinny that we're looking for, and do it again. You know, like reload the page and then search Vinny over again and then do it again and again and again and again and again and make
Vinny, the number one Google search term for the name Vinny, you know, Vinny Eastwood or whatever I am. It'd be cool. It'd be cool, I think. And that'd be something I could tout, you know.
Sounds like a grassroots effort to get you to the top.
Yes, get me to the top. And and then I could go rub it in all the mainstream media faces and stuff like that. You'd just be like, ha. Mayor is remarkably egotistical of me, I think. Is it? Is it? I don't know. At least I'm going to have fun while I'm doing it.
It's amazing to me that these shows, I remember when they first came out and I thought how incredibly weird it is to put CCTV cameras all over someone's house and put a bunch of people in there that you know don't like each other and then watch them like rats in a cage chew each other up. I never understood that.
Yeah, well, I remember an Endemol production called Big Brother, and the Endemol logo is an eye, all right? It's a big, big eye that's looking at you. It says Endemol. It's like an Australian company or something like that. And they make a program called Big Brother where they get a whole bunch of Australians or whatever into a house together, and they're all under complete and total surveillance at all times. There's cameras and microphones absolutely everywhere, you know? You get all the nudity and all of that kind of stuff. I was just thinking, man, that's real conditioning right there, isn't it? It's actually making it fun and fashionable to have absolutely no privacy of any freaking kind.
Do you remember MTV way back, had The Real World?
Yeah.
Where they put a bunch, and that was the first one, and it spun off all these other ones, and now that's all you see, reality TV. But it's crazy that you're actually watching through a CCTV camera, just like the government is watching you, just like your local government's watching you, and you're watching these people, and it's entertainment. That's creepy.
Yeah, it is. It's, well, I think reality TV is now the cheapest form of television to make, you know? You don't need a studio. You don't need nothing. You know, it's just basically here's reality. Chuck some cameras in there. Hence, it's reality TV. Very, very cheap to make, and it's the most popular form of television. Incidentally, maybe it's because people are really easy to manipulate. Thank you.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back.
I've been to Reno, Chicago.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. There are some internet-y games afoot at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. Some bad, 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 bad people out there hacking and destroying and messing up internet connections all over the place. And I'm just about to drop out right now. Wait a second. Wait for it. Wait. Okay, it's not happening. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Anyway, my very special guest. In fact, I find it ironic that I always say my very special guest, regardless of who the guest is, because if they're all very special, then technically none of them are special, are they? So my regular guest, my pretty average guest, is Douglas Dietrich. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be just part of the normal crowd for a change, I assure you, and I appreciate that, Mr. Eastwood, and certainly glad to be here. Normally, I would still be asleep at this hour, being a creature of the night, but we'll see if I can inhale enough oxygen to get my brain working. Either that, or I'll hit some crack or meth or something and speed myself up a bit so that I can talk.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll have to go to the LAPD to purchase it, of course. Right. Now, today we're going to be talking about Satanism in the military, and Super Soldier Summit conference is going to be coming up soon. SuperSoldierSummit.com, I believe, is the website. The lovely Laurian Fenton is putting this on for That's everybody correct. Concerned, and you'll be attending that too, won't you?
That's right, and I want to thank you for bringing that up very much, because that will be the topic of our discussion over what I feel will be the remainder of the program. Do we just have this hour or the 2 hours that Mr. Eastwood?
Excellent. We got the two.
That's fantastic. I appreciate that, because I will discuss a lot of the topics that we'll be covering there. I think that we've covered Satanism, I wouldn't say thoroughly, but we have introduced it to the audience, so I'll be happy to go into that. But I thought that the audience might also be interested in mind control, the attempt to harness and develop psychic powers by both the Soviet Union and the United States at the height of what the Americans call the Cold War, but what was functionally the Third World War. And certainly the Soviet Union recognized it as such. And they lost, essentially, and America was left pretty much eviscerated. So it was a time in which they were using every weapon that they could develop, and one of these weapons was trying to maximize or weaponize the human potential. And this is where a lot of the New Age movement got a big, shall we say, boost in terms of popularity, was because a lot of credibility was given to these kinds of talents by the U.S. government. And as a result, however, what a lot of people don't know about is the uglier side, or rather, a lot of people have heard of it, but they want to ignore it, want to not take it into account, and that would be the Super Soldier program. And just to differentiate this, Mr. Eastwood, the term super soldier is, of course, a misnomer. It is misleading in the sense that the just any code name would be misleading intentionally. A good example would be during the time of the Third Reich, where the largest tank in the world, where only a few of these tanks were produced, they were deployed on the Eastern Front. The Americans never got a single example of this kind of tank. They were extremely large, larger than the King Tiger tank. They were codenamed Maus, M-A-U-S, which is the German word for mouse. And then you've got the smallest tank in the world, which was one of the world's first robot tanks. It was remotely controlled, again deployed on the Eastern Front by the Third Reich, and it was codenamed Goliath. Well, the term super soldier has a connotation where instantly the image that comes to mind is he's bigger, he's badder, he's a genetically bred Superman. But the reality is that the Super Soldier program referred to the weakest among us, and those were children, and they were mostly taken out of broken families, orphanages. They were literally adopted and placed into foster homes that were intentionally abusive, or they were taken into orphanages that were essentially government-sponsored or government-exploited. And the children in those programs were essentially trained to become very ideal assassins, not in the sense that they were integrated personalities who had control of their lives, who were able to maintain a profession where they would, shall we say, have control over their own destiny. And for instance, when we take a look at the assassin in the James Bond films, in Assassin's Creed, we're given an impression of distinct empowerment. None of these children were to live a life that was one of self-empowerment. Their lives were lives of total disempowerment. They had no knowledge of what they were doing, quite literally, and they were doing everything in terms of split personality, and they would often be the victims of whatever they were doing themselves because they were expendable. The government could always make more. So the reason that this was going on is extremely mundane. People, again, despite having their knowledge that the government is corrupt, they tend to forget how banal the corruption truly is. And to put this into perspective for you, again, the U.S. military, which was in charge of, logically, the Super Soldier program, is an extremely small community. I brought this up before, and I'll emphasize it again. You take the entire Department of Defense, which I worked for almost a decade, which are civilians. All of the military serves a civilian chain of command, all the way up to the civilian president, who is their executive commander-in-chief. You take that entire Department of Defense, is only 100,000 bureaucrats. They do not wear uniforms. They're entirely civilian. They've never seen anything in terms of a military barracks other than in theory, you know, etc. These are people totally functionally disaffiliated with the battlefield. They are considered part of the military. So if you add all of those 100,000 bureaucrats together with the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard, and the National Guard, and the Reserves, you have 2.5 million people. That's going to shrink now with sequestration. They're going to take 20,000 Marines, 10% of the Marine Corps out of 200,000 Marines. They're going to take many out of the Army. We're going to lose 500,000 jobs. So it's going to get even smaller. Even at full strength, at 2.5 million people, it was less than 1% of the U.S. population, because the U.S. population is the third largest on Earth. That is why the U.S. is a superpower. One of the reasons why it's got the largest market in the world is sheer weight, sheer inertia of buying power. And it was developed, and it is the third largest after China and India. So with 300, both of which have 1 billion people each, but with 350 million people in the United States, you've got 50 million of them are illegal immigrants, and even if we factor those out and just have 300 million straight, legally recognized citizens of the U.S., you still have less than 1% of the population serving in the military or affiliated with the Department of Defense. So how is it that this less than 1%, you want to talk about the 1% in the Occupy movement? This is it. How is it that this less than 1% of the U.S. population every single year is budgeted over 50% of the discretionary fiscal income? Every year, statistically, annually, 51% statistically, in the quotidian sense, goes to the military. Without question, it's budgeted out of our discretionary fiscal income by the U.S. government. So this is a congressional military-industrial complex, amongst many other aspects of this complex. And we have to ask why this enormous allotment to such a small amount of the population, which obviously delivers zero in terms of its service. 9/11 proved the fact that all of our nuclear defense system, all of our massive investment in occupation overseas is utterly worthless. There is the porousness of our borders, the 50 million illegal immigrants, which I have just mentioned, proves that we are the world's least defended third world nation that has the world's highest military budget. So all of the military, just all of the high technology, the stealth bombers, the drones, cannot protect us from an invasion of basically a mass migration of people who have.
Yeah, so major technical difficulties today, ladies and gentlemen. I must apologize to the listeners. Doug, I think you're back now.
Great. Yeah, sorry about that. I couldn't hear you either, so I don't know what response you gave. I assume it was appropriately witty.
No, it was simply, I can't hear you. Where are you?
Oh, okay. Oh, where did I break off?
Something about the fact that you can't defend the U.S. borders with the stealth bombers and the drones and the nuclear weaponry and all of that. And you know what? Maybe I should have some kind of a witty response to that, because I think it would be quite funny actually if you have a couple of Mexican nationals jumping over the border or just walking through the desert. And you're like, oh man, it's gonna be so great. We're gonna go to the land of opportunity, and then. All of a sudden, sombreros go flying everywhere, and burn poncho remains and things like that get found by generations later on.
That's a horrible image. That's a horrible image. At any rate, part of the irony here is obviously, as I was saying, America is essentially it is now like the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was a third world nation with a mighty military machine, and in the end it collapsed. And America is obviously following that pattern. But let's ask why. Since we're not a a statist nation, supposedly, since we're not a socialist nation, supposedly, since, and of course we are both, but the problem is with the voting by the politicians. Oh, I don't know how to turn my video. Oh, there we are. Thank you for reminding me. My video went off. I apologize for that. So you were, of course, relieved of the evil presence of my face for at least momentarily.
The dark specter of Dougie.
Yes. At any rate, so my point is that the reason the politicians do this is because they're compromised. And this happened starting quite some time ago. What happened was just one century after the establishment of the American Republic, which was, of course, 1776, when the American Constitutional Republic was established. The one thing that we can say it was not, I can say many negative things about it. I can say the founding fathers were plantation owners, slave owners, that they were all, of course, very distinctly white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males, that women did not have voting rights. Certainly minorities, such as African Americans, were legally slaves. So we can say many of the negative things about it. But the one thing it was not was it was not a military junta. So how did it come to this point where we were servicing the military so obsequiously? Basically what happened was the American Civil War, and the American Civil War was a railroad war. Literally every single major battle in the American Civil War was within 10 to 20 miles of track. And because they were fighting for industrial centers in a emergent industrialized economy, then the North was able to take advantage of that, the Union, and ultimately industrially overwhelm the South, the Confederate States of America, in many ways because they were still, in the main, a very agrarian economy. So when this took place, the Northern Army was extremely corrupt. It raided the palatial southern manses and estates and started an enormous black market. And one of the men who fought that corruption was a politician named Samuel Tilden. A politician, this politician was one of the few honest politicians. He was the Ralph Nader of his day. And what happened was they elected him president. And, of course, he didn't get to serve because his election was stolen by the U.S. military. What happened was the robber barons, the rail barons, the men who were in charge of the rails said, we've had such a great expansion during this war because they've needed our track to be expanded for military logistics. We want this to go on forever and never stop. So they said, we want to expand into the West. So what we're going to do is we're going to fund a military junta. And so what they did was when Samuel Tilden won the election of 1876, literally 100 years after the establishment of the U.S. Constitution, they bought out the election. They basically – he happened to be Democrat. They fronted a Republican candidate against him, and this was General Rutherford B. Hayes. And General Hayes – was a brutal man, a very physically large man. He was known to be quite abusive towards his troops physically. And this individual was basically just like a gorilla in a suit. And so when they fronted this individual and presented all of the electoral votes to the public, everybody knew that Samuel Tilden had been elected by 250,000 votes in the popular election. They knew that he had garnished 196 electoral votes over the 173 of General Rutherford B. Hayes. And yet still, without any finesse whatsoever, all kinds of money was given to the vote counters to discredit the or discount the Democratic votes in both Louisiana and in Florida. And this was very similar to the Jeb Bush discounting the Al Gore votes in Florida, the hanging chads, all the rest of that that was to be replayed later. And as a result, Rutherford B. Hayes won by a single electoral vote. And so... Mm-hmm.
Well, hold up. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Douglas Dietrich.
Bonkers.
In my life ain't what it seems. I went cocked to the vote.
back and flee. I act real shallow, but I'm in 2D. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let sanity give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that might be just a little bit bonkers. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Hey, and you know, the way I look at it, the most interesting people are always just a little bit crazy. Always. My very special guest, completely unrelated, is Douglas Dietrich. Welcome back.
That was a wonderful intro. Thank you so much. And no need to worry. I fit the crazy bill. I see a psychiatrist for post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. So definitely I'll be the first to admit that. And that's that brings to mind what people have said about the government bugging my home or emplacing microphones. And I always think, what would they expect to hear other than the fact, I mean, I live alone. I don't say anything on the phone that I wouldn't say on air. And the only thing they're going to be hearing is my screaming in my sleep. And when I'm alone during the daytime, maybe some various phrases such as curse words when I'm spilling something, or three-syllable sentences like "Why me, God?" being uttered every once in a while. Other than that, the only other thing that would catch would be maybe some strange grunting sounds while I'm cruising for online porn or something. But at any rate, there you have it. There is nothing.
You know, you just described precisely what the microphones in my house pick up.
That's right.
Maybe with that, I don't scream in my sleep, though. I talk in my sleep. Like, I actually do accounting in my sleep. Like, I'm always talking about numbers and talking about money and stuff in my sleep for some reason. My girlfriend's like, woken me up sometimes. She's like, Vinny, stop doing accounting in your sleep. And I was like, oh, sorry.
Oh, that's pretty alarming, by the way. That's it goes to show you how much we're all worried about finances. I probably do the same thing. I probably dream about knocking off gas stations.
Give me the money.
That's right. Not the bag with the marked bills. You know, that sort of comment. At any rate, good sir.
And throw another Nutrageous bar into that bag too.
That's right.
The Day-Glo orange wrapper, so that when I pull it out in front of a cop, he won't shoot me because I'm black.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, no, a whole bunch of Red Bull too. Something to keep me awake when my speed wears off. At any rate, so with what I was saying about that military junta that was effectively established in 1876, at that time there was serious talk of another American revolution because of that. It was, in other words, this was known at that time that this happened. Everybody realized what had happened. And at that point, America split up to the point where various Republican-controlled newspapers were calling for all of the men who were of that party to basically come into Washington with their guns to defend the new military junta from any Democrats who would feel that they needed to amass in Washington and take the government back by force. Now, this is important because in those days, the Solid South was primarily white voting Democrats. So we were getting back to another Southern revolution that was brewing. So a deal was struck where General Rutherford B. Hayes ended the Union occupation of the former Confederate States of America. This was known as the Great Compromise. So he withdrew all Union occupation troops, and this was how the Klan was able to assert itself, gerrymander all of the districts, and prevent black votes from counting for the next several generations. So in that sense, the South truly won the Civil War in the sense of preserving much of the status quo that had existed in the antebellum South from being overwhelmed by a majority black population. And the majority black population was terrorized into exmigrating, and this was how you had a great expansion of the African-American minority into the other states of the Union. So this was the repercussions of this military junta, and therefore the robber barons, the rail barons, were able to exploit the African-Americans in the North in an industrial economy, strangely enough, not as labor, but as strike breakers that they would bring in to any white Americans who were trying to unionize. So it's a very strange, very exploitive.
Who were these rail barons that you keep referring to? Because I've heard references that the Rockefellers had massive interests in rails in tandem with Rockefeller.
The listenership can hear me, then if the listenership can hear me, then the rail barons were men like Edward Harriman of the Union Pacific Rail, and we're dropping off. Okay, so I'm going to ask if American Freedom Radio can hear me.
Okay, and we're back. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Douglas, you can turn your video back on again. There is some real bad stuff going on at AmericanFreedomRadio.com at the moment. We keep getting cut off on a rather sporadic basis. I think we were off air there for like 4 minutes or something. Which is not good. Right, well, anyway, Douglas, can you hear me? No? Frank. Okay. Well, we're going to break anyway. Hopefully we'll get these issues resolved. Probably won't, though. And you can expect a completely messed up broadcast today if you are one of those people unfortunate enough to be listening live, if you are listening to the archive shows and what have you. I think I'll probably have to spend just a few more hours or something like that on the archives today than usual to, you know, put it together so it doesn't sound like there's massive drop-offs for like 5 minutes or something that we just had. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we will continue our conversation, interrupted, of course, with Douglas Dietrich. Back in a minute.
Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
All right, welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island change nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because now everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Douglas Dietrich. Welcome back. And we're going into the thing. What I wanted to ask you, because you were talking about the rail barons and things of that nature, I was wondering how the Rockefellers connected to any of this, because I've seen a couple of documentaries where that US Standard Oil got really, really tight-knit with the railway lines and things like that in order to push their oil products and things all around the US. Anything to do with that?
Oh, I'm sure they did. With the amount of money that the Rockefellers had, they no doubt had invested interests in many economic fronts. But the Rockefellers never stood out in any of the documents I was dealing with in regards to the rails. Most of what stood out concerned a certain Edward S. Harriman of Union Pacific Railway, because he was one of the main pioneers of pushing rail expansion to the west and into the Pacific. Literally, that's why it was called Union Pacific, was because it was Union in the sense of the Union Army of the United States from the American War between the states, combined with the drive towards the Pacific. So his expansionism is what led directly to the Spanish-American War, in which the Americans stole the Spanish Empire by force, the Philippines, Cuba, etc. So without getting too lost in somewhat more conventional history, as occulted as that history is, I think I've laid down the groundwork for how America established a military junta, which then pretty much came to dominate its economy. Now the question is how, because when you get a military junta like that, there are still other nations where there are conflicting interests, such as the church, such as corporations who might say this is bad for business or this is somehow spiritually corrupt, and then you might get just factions trying to vie for domination that will act as a check and balance But in the United States, that has not happened. The United States military has continued to grow, to expand exponentially, literally exponentially. So how did this take place? Well, a lot of that has to do with what is known as the Super Soldier Program. And the Super Soldier Program compromises the politicians who are theoretically the representatives of the American electorate. And the way that they do this is due to whatever reason, due to something that perhaps begins with initiation rituals in terms of elite fraternities and schools. Perhaps it begins with just a natural cycle of abuse that takes place within the old rich or the old rich of the United States. It is definitely something that seems to predominate in political dynasties, which is pedophilia. And the political dynasties of the United States, make no mistake about it, are definitely old rich and upper class for the majority of them. And so with that in mind, what the military cultivated was what they would call, in the documents that I had to contend with, what they referred to as queer whores. And that meant that they took young boys and began to prostitute them out to politicians so that they could blackmail and compromise them. Well, this began to get increasingly more sophisticated. And what the U.S. military did was they created an entire cadre of young boys in particular, and in the minority, young girls. And they would adopt them from orphanages. They would basically take them at a very young and impressionable age. And they would form multiple personalities by fragmenting their core personality into a series of what are known as alters. And what the way that they do this is through traumatic programming. And the trauma programming involves taking young children to, say, animal shelters. And then they will have them adopt kittens, puppies, raise them to the point where they bond with them, and then under threat of torture. Okay, we're back online?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is fruck. All right. For flux's sake, with the flux capacitor and what have you. Jeepers creepers. Ugh, so frustrating, man. I really apologize to the listeners. I mean, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. I'm of course, I'm unprofessional. But
yeah, that's a given for both of us.
Yeah. But this is not the fault of us being unprofessional. This is the fault of something we don't know. It could be solar flares. It could be magnetic storms. It could be the Department of Defense going, we need to hack these people there. It could be Mossad. We just don't know. What we do know is there's a constant frickin' interruption, like every 5 frickin' minutes with our frickin' internet connections, and frickin' frustrating. Douglas, if you would continue, that would be nice.
Yes, thank you. And So what I was saying about the – I'm getting a little funny, shall we say, signals on my screen here, but we should be fine. Keep in mind for the listenership that the this is the most interfered with program aside from mine on air, period, is Vinny Eastwood's program. When he has guests like myself in particular, then we're going to have to expect this. This is just part of the nature of the beast. So they want to make this as unlistenable as possible so that you don't listen, but this should clue you in that you must listen. So what I'm talking about in terms of this childhood exploitation is that many of these children, through the processes I just described of animal bonding and then animal mutilation and slaughter, are basically fragmented with that primal trauma into normally splitting a different personality. So that is their first alter. After the primary alter is created, then they are taken to other orphanages and encouraged to bond with other orphans in situations where they develop a friendship, perhaps even physically intimate with either a member of the opposite sex or the same sex. at some point they will be ordered under threat of torture or death to kill that partner. And so this, again, further fragments the personality. Now, some of these specimens of victimization can fragment into as many as a dozen or a score of personalities. Now, all of these personalities are, again, called alters. They are inaccessible to even the super victim himself, other than through code phrases, trigger words, repeated a certain number of times, like circus, 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 on a phone or something like that, will bring forth one other alter or personality. Other than that, the super victim, as opposed to super soldier, is the more appropriate term that I am employing. The super victim will transition from one alter to another without control or volition anywhere that he or she goes. And because of that, the super victim is unsociable. Because they are unsociable or unable to interact with society on any normal basis, no one interacts with them, and this prevents questioning. This prevents leakage of information. The other advantage of the multiple personalities that cannot be accessed volitionally, they transition quite erratically, is that the only person who can access the memory of the personality that committed an assassination under orders would be the intelligence agency of the military, which trained and created this particular super victim. So that means if they're arrested by a local constabulary, a rival intelligence agency, either foreign or domestic, no one can break them under interrogation because they don't have the codes to access the personality that committed the murder. Because the personality which committed the murder, literally, these alters are on different timelines. The alters are at different ages. There are some that are infantile. There are some that are prepubescent. There are some that are adolescent. And there are some that are seniors. And so because of this variety in timelines, the person is truly insane, schizophrenic by all normal societal standards. They are skipping not just from a different personality to another, they're skipping from a different timeline to another, and their stories don't match. This is why when they relate their experiences, oh, I grew up and this happened and then this happened and this happened, it comes out so insanely as a non sequitur that it is dismissed. That is the whole point of creating a personality like that. No one takes what they say seriously at a societal level. So the military has created the perfect machine for compromising politicians who have sex with these children and are threatened by these children. The military will say, remember, at any time, we can give the code word and the child that you're sleeping with can kill you. And beyond that, that would not be enough to keep a politician from talking. Beyond that, remember that all politicians have dynasties. So these politicians' children become politicians. Nothing would destroy a dynasty more than your father was found murdered in a homosexual suicide murder with a child. And both he and the child are dead. And that would destroy the entire political dynasty. None of the children would be able to run for office, at least for a generation. And as a result, this is true compromise. The child sleeps with the politician. He gets to know the estate, either the mansion, either the vacation home, either the high-rise apartment. They know it, and therefore, when the military gives the order, the politician can be terminated because they know his bedroom. They know everything intimately, and if they do, you know, they've also been seen with him. They've also, they're always photographed with him by the military, if no one else. So this maintains Congress in particular, but the Senate as well, voting constantly for unlimited military budget. That is why we maintain the position that we have, where less than 1% of the population gets over 50% of our discretionary federal income, fiscal income, even though they deliver zero in terms of defense. Even though our nation is falling victim to mass migration, and at any time, anyone could take us out with an electromagnetic pulse, and of course, in a more primitive fashion, buy an airplane ticket and basically do what damage they can by that weapon. That may be overplayed at this point, but not really. Airplane security, despite what everyone is doing, everyone who has been on a plane that has been taken out, a shoe bomber, an underwear bomber, they've always been taken out by passengers. Every single one that's on a plane has never been identified, screened, or filtered by security. That really tells us the level of defense that we have in return for the money that we're paying.
I think it's more the fact that the military are the ones who actually put the underwear bomber or the shoe bomber or the 9/11 hijackers on the planes in the first place and then swipe them past security so that they can't be stopped. Because, hey, what's a perfect justification for more defense spending? A gap in the defense, which the Defense Department made sure actually frickin' happened.
You know, your point is well taken, and believe me, it's logical, it's valid. You give them way too much credit.
I'm more talking about the CIA rather than the DOD.
They're all. I worked with the U.S. government for so many years at the municipal level, the state level, at the federal level, and I can tell you, despite everything that I've just told you, which sounds like this is so incredibly sinister, this is so incredibly organized, it makes it sound like no matter how evil they are, the one thing you can give them credit for is they've got their act together. But the reality is that all of this happens in a – the fact is that it's like the Russian KGB, the Soviet KGB, excuse me, once coined a phrase, three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. And because of that, the reality is all of this really leaks. These super soldiers are talking. The problem is they've been talking for years. Nobody's been listening. We've had the various childhood pedophile scandals in the United States, ranging from the Presidio Military Base where I worked at to that Francis School, etc. There's all kinds of other child molestation scandals, which I am far less familiar with, that other people have reported on extensively, Boys Town, etc. All of these are part of this super soldier program, and it's been leaking. The point is, every time it leaks, the media does not report it, the general public doesn't want to hear it, and the end result is the victims themselves are discredited, oftentimes because they have, out of necessity, become professional homosexual prostitutes. Because they have no other way in which they make their living, and therefore everything they say is discredited on the basis of, oh, how can we trust you? You're selling your body for a living. When they do speak out against senators or other people that they have slept with or the military. So the end result is we have a kind of analogy in Hollywood, which, like the military, is a meat market that is constantly seeking new, warm, young bodies. And what happens is we've had various actors come out and speak about pedophilia. And, of course, they know they're going to pay the price that they will never be in a movie ever again. So a few have done this. And as a result, we've had a kind of awareness of these mind control programs in Hollywood. Now, I don't know all of the details of it, but here are some examples. When you take a look at someone like Britney Spears, she goes into classic alter persona when she starts talking without volition in a British accent. Many of these alters will speak in different accents, Southern accents, British accents, and as a result, you've got personalities that are not just different in terms of their timelines, different in terms of their paradigm or their memories, but also different in terms of their cultures. It's a very, very fragmented personality that's being created, and certainly Britney Spears seemed to manifest that. But I'll go into some details about Hollywood and how it kind of expresses the mind control phenomena when we come back from our break.
Yeah, I think it was Corey Feldman, you know, famous yes. Child star from the Lost Boys and Stand By Me and things like that, came out and said that, yeah, pedophilia is the big secret. You know, it's the big secret. And sure enough, he hasn't had another gig since. It's basically like, in my opinion, if you are a ruthless scumbag, you're not only forbidden from speaking or whatever, But it's more the case that you will actually have real consequences if you speak out. Even if you're part of it and admitting your guilt or anything like that, it's either the consequence of you going to jail or you never having your career come back or whatever. You know, they got it really well stitched up. And all we're going to do is tug at the thread. We'll be right back.
Corey Feldman has no idea what it's like not to be famous. He was just 3 years old in this McDonald's commercial.
I literally was famous before I knew my own name.
His roles defined the 80s. Goonies.
This was my dream, my wish.
Stand By Me.
Call my dad Looney again. I'll kill you.
License to Drive.
The only difference between you and that greaseball is that he has a license and you don't.
Films that propelled him into the spotlight for his entire youth. But being famous so young, he says, caused serious damage to him and his friends.
Do you feel like you missed out on a normal childhood?
What childhood? I don't know what that means.
A lost childhood and a loss of innocence. He blames the adults, not just those looking to profit from charming children, but also some with far more sinister motives.
I can tell you that the number one problem in Hollywood was and is and always will be pedophilia. That's the biggest problem for children in this industry.
The casting couch even applies to children.
Oh, yeah. Not in the same way. It's all done under the radar.
Nobody talks about pedophilia.
It's the big secret.
And it's widespread?
Oh, yeah. I was surrounded by them when I was 14 years old. Surrounded. Literally. Didn't even know it. It wasn't until I was old enough to realize what they were and what they wanted and what they were about and the types of people that were surrounding me till I went, oh my God, they were everywhere like vultures.
Vultures who Feldman says abused him and his best friend, the late child actor Corey Haim, his co-star in The Lost Boys.
Well, what happens if my mom is dating the head vampire?
Feldman says the trauma of that pedophilia contributed to Haim's death.
There's one person to blame in the death of Corey Haim, and that person happens to be a Hollywood mogul, and that person needs to be exposed, but unfortunately I can't be the one to do it. But the person that knows who did it and knows who he is watching right now, I guarantee you.
Intriguing.
There was a circle of older men that surrounded themselves around this group of kids. And they all had either their own power or connections to great power in the entertainment industry.
Feldman won't name names. And he admits his friend had a struggle with addiction, which he says was a mechanism to cope with his demons.
It was a symptom.
It was a symptom, correct.
Hell yeah.
In 2008, the two Coreys confronted each other on their reality show about the dark past they shared.
You let me get around in my life, man, wait, so to speak. When I was about 14 and a half, and I'm saying this right now. What'd you do, man, when you saw that going down when I was 14 to me? What'd you do? You knew about it.
You want to talk about the truth? Okay, well, then let's talk about the truth. I was being molested at the same time by somebody else. What'd you do? You know, there's a lot of good people in this industry, but there's also a lot of really, really sick, corrupt people in this industry. And there are people in this industry who have gotten away with it for so long that they feel they're above the law.
Hmm.
And that's got to change. That's got to stop.
Right, that's Corey Feldman, ladies and gentlemen, the child star, telling it as it is, you know?
Very much so. And I very much appreciate your playing that so that people get the true intensity, the real seriousness of this issue, whereas Corey Feldman will not name names. I've named plenty of names in plenty of the interviews I've been on. We don't need to go over that. The Corey, of course, does not have the background where I have, where he would have the confidence to do that, because he would seriously be contending with life-threatening issues were he to come out with many of these names. But let's take a look at how Hollywood, when I spoke of Britney Spears and her open breakdown into different altars, then one of the things that is interesting is that Hollywood has portrayed this so graphically, or more specifically the music industry through its videos, that I'm literally impressed by what I see. And I'm not quite sure if there's an intentional message, certainly on the part of Madonna, for instance, when she did the video Die Another Day. Die Another Day shows a woman being interrogated, and while she's being interrogated, she is in her mind battling between different split personalities. And while the personalities are battling each other in her mind, the interrogators are unable to basically access any information. So they increasingly go to more violent lengths in the video to break her to the point where the video has a very ambiguous ending where she's either escaping into her mind or she literally escapes by occult methods because Madonna is very much into the Kabbalah and kind of incorporates that for artistic creative reasons. But other than that, the rest of the video is graphic enough where it exposes how intense this schizophrenic experience can be. When her personalities are cutting and slicing and injuring each other, the cuts and the bruises appear on her physical body. So it's almost like a self-induced stigmata that I have seen that can manifest on these various super soldiers when they are in that intense of a breakdown or a transition. It literally does occur to that. And many of them, of course, die or auto-destruct either under orders when they become a liability or expendable, or they auto-destruct on their own. You would think that such a long, extensive training process would make them an asset that's too valuable to sacrifice, but the reality is they are quite expendable, and they just get more kids, more children, anytime they want. And
can I ask, is there a degree of pleasure derived from the sacrificing of these children? You know, like you're giving up an asset or whatever, they must be doing it to get their rocks off.
Oh, I'm sure that that is part of all of this. Then I'm certain that that is indeed a part of it. I'll give you an example that I've used before. When you see the movie Black Hawk Down, and the hero's name in the film is Danny Grimes. Danny Grimes is a fictitious name created for the real character around which the film is centered, which was Master Sergeant, U.S. Army Ranger, John Stebbins. And Stebbins is spending the rest of his life in a military brig, Fort Leavenworth, for child rape and molestation, abduction, keeping children chained to the wall in his basement, feeding dog food bowls, raping them every day. His own wife turned him in. And this individual, what makes him stand out is the fact that all of the former Rangers or retired Army will tell you he committed all of his crimes after retirement. Well, the reality is, if that's the case, then he should be in any regular civilian prison with all the other baby raping SOBs. But he's in a military brig. That means that when he committed these crimes, whether he was retired or not, he was under military control, which means he was abducting and raping these children under orders. So that should add a dimension to this, which most people never consider. Now, I've seen far more examples than that. One example being the man who developed LOGLEN, or logical language. It was Dr. James Cook, Encyclopedia Brown. Encyclopedia was his nickname. That's where we got the term Encyclopedia Brown from, for a series of children's detective books. He actually wrote a science fiction novel himself called The Troika Incident, which was a socialist utopian novel that basically anticipated and predicted the internet, only he had a communistic vision of info-socialism, in which all information could never be trademarked, there was no intellectual property, that it was a universal Akashic record, so to speak, in cyberspace. So he was truly idealistic. And this individual was a sociologist who had developed the board game Careers, which was trademarked by Parker Brothers and sold for 20, 30 years. So anyone who's played that board game Careers, you have James Cook Brown to thank for designing that game. Well, James Brown was hired by the U.S. military to design a artificial military language. So what he did was he synthesized the 9 most commonly spoken languages on Earth, and he basically narrowed down all the aspects of those languages that were most commonly used and eliminated all of the cultural nuances so he would have a singularly pragmatic, practical language with no cultural baggage. Well, they had to have a individual live with him who was military, who could use his home as a communications headquarters to learn this language and then deploy this language by using it on the communication system, the radio, the transmitter, the transceiver, with various units in the field who were training on using it in the field. Now, this way, America could work with its NATO allies or other allies, and they were trying to develop the synthetic language. Well, this individual happened to be a U.S. Army Ranger, Master Sergeant, who was retired and contracted as a mercenary by the U.S. government for plausible deniability. Well, he wound up raping this guy's son, and that's when James Cook Brown went nuts. He basically disassociated with the Department of Defense. He built his own private, personally designed, futuristic catamaran sailboat, and he wound up sailing around the world trying to promote Loglan, this artificial language, as a language of peace, of universal communication. Well, he died ultimately in a port hospital in Argentina in this forlorn quest. The language went into obscurity, and the reason I know so much about this was because I was responsible for coordinating the documentation and the communications between himself from the University of San Diego and with the Department of Defense at the Presidio, because the Presidio was where the Defense Language Institute was established. It later on moved down to, of course, Santa Clara or Santa Cruz, something like that. But it had started off in San Francisco. So I was dealing with all the records. Later on, after his death, I tried to follow up on James Brown, and the University of San Diego denied all affiliation with him, denied that he had ever been employed there, denied that he existed. But if people do research independently, they'll find out everything I say is true. And so this is the kind of evil that we're talking about, because the men that they employ cannot stop themselves. Like any child molester, whether they're ordered to molest children or not, they're going to do it because that's what they do. And so even though this man screwed up everything for the DOD and crashed the whole Loglan program, then this individual was just part of the collateral damage of this. This is why I say, when you're talking about putting the shoe bomber or the underwear bomber on the plane, that's possible. I mean, that's entirely conceivable that the DOD would be behind that, or the CIA or any of these agencies. But keep in mind that these are also agencies of incredible corruption, incompetence. And there's just as many things, if not more, that go wrong than go right with what they're doing. So there has to be all kinds of collateral damage from the super soldier program that we don't know about. A super victim of this sort could leave a trail of bodies all over North America or the United Kingdom. He wouldn't remember any of it. So because each one was...
Okay.
Oh, great.
Okay, so we're back. This is great. What's that? The fifth, sixth time we've been knocked off? At least,
considering the subject.
It's unfrickin' believable. Unfrickin' believable.
But this, you know, if the government really wants to take you offline, they can take you offline. We're discovering that right now. You know, that's this is far more than just solar flares. This is far more than just a magnetic storm. But to bring it to a kind of new level, another personal experience that I had based on my own memories, when Lady Gaga came out with her video Bad Romance, I remember I didn't see it until maybe a year and a half or 2 years after it was released. And then I kept watching it over and over and over again and wondering what was it that mesmerized me so much about the video. And it wasn't the song itself, because Lady Gaga never lip syncs. And whenever she does a performance, she does one that's fairly different each time, because she individualizes her singing with each performance. But in the video itself, the official video, there is a scene where she says, "I don't want to be friends," that part of the song. And when she says, "I don't want to be friends, I don't want to be friends," that was the part that had kept grabbing me. And I recognized that it was a flashback to the memory I had at the Presidio military base, where, of all things, we had a children's room in the postal library, and we had many elderly ladies who worked with us who, because they were government, could never be fired, and they didn't want to retire, and they all had Parkinson's, they shook, they couldn't type, And so the only thing they were really good for was reading, in terms of the job at work, was in reading children's stories to children in the children's room during the daylight hours. Well, there was one girl who wouldn't leave the children's room at one time, and like it was a sanctuary for her. The elderly ladies, of course, couldn't pick her up and eject her, so they had me physically pick her up and get her out of the library to wait for her parents to pick her up, because they were so freaked out they didn't want her in the library. So when I went in to pick her up, she kept clawing at my eyes, saying, "I don't want to be friends. I don't want to be friends." And it's the same movements Lady Gaga makes in the Bad Romance video. And, of course, you know, I had scars, just nail trails down my face for the next several weeks, if not months, with the mania with which she was trying to claw my eyes out. I realized, of course, very quickly, this was how child molesters always approach children, is let's be friends. Okay, but we're friends. I can do this because we're friends. You know, we're friends now. All the friends keep secrets. Friends don't tell on their friends. So this whole friends thing becomes anathema to children who are victims of that kind of molestation. Of course, when I speak of the Presidio, by this time it should be known to some of our listenership who asks us, this is our archives. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's why Lady Gaga doesn't want to be friends anymore. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Everybody, it's the final segment that we have here with my main man, Dougie Dietrich, talking about, you know, some really dark Shiite Muslim. That's for dang sure. See, I stayed within the FCC regulations.
There we go.
All right. Finally, before we get cut off again, wait for it. All right. I don't know. And by the way, everybody, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. I hate to reiterate, but frickin' heck, it's frustrating. See, mate, I don't abuse people anymore. Like, back when I was a kid, I used to abuse the heck out of people, you know, swearing and being nasty and calling people names, things like that. I don't do that anymore. Not to people, anyway. I do it to technology, because I know that I can't hurt its feelings, you know? So whenever we get cut off, ladies and gentlemen, just imagine the rage kind of... And every type of curse word and obscenity that you can ever imagine, so loud that it would make a small kitty's eardrums burst. And that's basically what goes on every time we get dropped off here. That's how I maintain my cool and calm, is by letting out the frustration at technology. I don't do it to people. Some people do it to other people whenever they criticize them or anything like that, and they just abuse them and stuff, and there's just like, oh, dude, come on, just abuse the technology. It doesn't have any feelings. Right, Douglas.
Thank you for sharing that.
We need to wrap up something here. SuperSoldierSummit.com, ladies and gentlemen, is going to be basically, could you give a summation of the Super Soldier Summit?
Yeah, the Super Soldier Summit is going to be taking place, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mr. Eastwood. I noticed that just when I'm getting to it, you've dropped off visually, so hopefully you can still hear me. And
okay.
Excellent. So it's taking place on, if correct me if I'm wrong on this, May 17th through the 18th, the weekend thereof. So I do believe that we're going to be active on the Friday of that weekend, Saturday and Sunday, but certainly during the 17th and 18th. And it is right outside of Las Vegas, Nevada. It will be taking place in, I believe, Henderson, Nevada. And what we will be doing will be giving many of the super soldiers a venue in which to speak of their experiences growing up. And, of course, their experiences will be far more graphic, far more, they're far more invested in trying to expose what they're exposing than, say, for instance, I don't know, it's hard to make any analogies, because someone like Corey Feldman made a true sacrifice. He has never been in any movie of any substance again, and many of these super soldiers are barely earning a living. Some of them are living in cars. Some of them can barely hold a job because they alter into different personalities, which make them unable to maintain a schedule, even when it comes to janitorial services or flipping burgers. So we're talking about truly transient people in a number of cases. In other cases where they've managed to gain some modicum of control over their lives, then you have a more coherent or stable platform on which they are articulating. But the problem with the super soldiers is coordinating them and in getting them to speak of what their experiences are in a manner that is at least somewhat coherent to the listenership. So these people will be personally there, and we will have many specialists there. We will have specialists there who, such as myself, who essentially was apparently intended by Colonel Michael Aquino, who I was assigned liaison responsibilities to for almost a decade, and he was the officially recognized satanic chaplain of the U.S. Army. One of the things I was bringing up before we went into the constant interruptions that we've been experiencing was the fact that at the Child Daycare Center of the Presidio Military Base, over 500,000 children are acknowledged as having been molested and perhaps most likely infected with AIDS through my high school teacher, Gary Willard Hambright, who was ultimately indicted on no less than 14 counts of assault against no less than 14 victims, all of them under 4 years of age. And this was something he would have been indicted for many, many more had he not died of AIDS while he was on trial. So this is the kind of situation we were confronted with in that environment. And this is something that was endemic throughout military environments at that time that this occurred. The United States military had bases worldwide in Okinawa, West Germany, Panama City, South Korea and the Philippines, etc. Subic Bay was still in U.S. possession at that time. Altogether, the U.S. Army alone in its daycare centers at these bases cared for 100,000 children a day. And to put this into perspective for you, at West Point, the child daycare center building number was 666. Many of the children started complaining about ritual abuse, being forced to smear themselves in their own feces and eat their own feces, drink their own urine, etc., adults urinating on them. All of this was under investigation by an attorney.
Frank.
A sound.
Yeah, we lost sound for a second there. They were under investigation by who?
By Rudy Giuliani, who declared that all of the children who were saying they were being raped and being abused, he declared that they were all incompetent to stand trial or give testimony. So that was his contribution to this entire sordid affair. So we can only assume and speculate as to what his motivations were or what kind of strings were attached to his career. But at any rate, these children, to give you an example of what was going on at West Point, a 22-month-year-old girl was raped and murdered, and the master sergeant who was identified as having committed the crime was released from military service, dishonorably discharged, but didn't spend a day in jail. So that is the kind of influence that we're talking about of the U.S. military on these aren't just children who are making up stories. They're dying. They're coming home, as they did from the child daycare center, infected with every single disease imaginable: chlamydia, gonorrhea, hepatitis, AIDS. Even a scumbag like my former high school instructor, Gary Willard Hambright, could not have all of those sexually transmissible diseases and still remain ambulatory, let alone be able to sexually perform. This is why it is obvious that there were many other people besides himself conducting the crimes at the daycare center, none of whom were brought to justice. The daycare center, of course, was burned to the ground. All evidence and all records were burned to the ground in the community center at the Presidio Military Base. Again, that is all part of this whole milieu. So we will discuss these things, the Satanism pervasive in the military, this super soldier program at the Super Soldier Summit. I would like everyone who can to go to www.supersoldiersummit.com, I believe, is the URL. correct me if I'm wrong on that, Mr. Eastwood, and then they can purchase tickets and help become part of the solution to this problem. The first part of the solution is awareness. Awareness of the fact that the overwhelming majority of the politicians, think about what I just said. Rudy Giuliani investigated the children at the West Point Daycare Center, over half a hundred of whom were claiming sexual abuse. They were going into the emergency room with vaginal lacerations, etc. We're talking about actual physical injuries, and he says, oh, they're just doing it to themselves. It's all their imagination. They just want attention. And this is the kind of political clout that we're speaking of that dismisses all of this. And this was in the 1980s, and they could get away with it then even better than now because there really wasn't that functional an internet then. There was an electronic information dissemination presence, a very primitive internet, but it was not really released by the DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, as the internet we know today until after these scandals had come to culmination. It was known as an officer's massacre. Most of the Christian officers whose children were targeted and victimized resigned, refused promotion, and that left the field wide open for the satanic officers to take over. And that is essentially one reason why our military behaves the way it does today. It's not that there aren't good people in the military, just like Corey Feldman said about it's not that there aren't good people in Hollywood. It's just that the people who are administering and commanding the situation are driving it in the direction which we see. So aside from that, I want to invite everyone also tomorrow. I will be on a live stream Camelot Roundtable discussion with Carrie Lynn Cassidy, who is no longer affiliated with any particular establishment that I know of, and she is using Project Camelot to organize independent discussion, in this case, tomorrow night, about the Pope, the new Pope, and Satanism in the Vatican, what direction the church may go in. And so I will be on the roundtable with Richard C. Hoagland, Jordan Maxwell, Jane Dyer, and William Dean Garner. And this will be at 7 p.m. Pacific time, which will be 10 p.m. Eastern time, United States. And, of course, tomorrow will be Thursday, the 28th of March, and it will be on Friday, the 29th of March, in Vinnie Eastwood's neighborhood on the western half of the international dateline in New Zealand and Australia, and, of course, the rest of the Pacific. So I do invite everyone to buy a ticket to that. It is, unfortunately, pay for the live stream, but it's well worth the price just to see if Jordan Maxwell can interact with us being a little more upbeat than usual, and hopefully Richard Hoagland will interact with us being a little more subdued than usual. And we can see how I handle myself between those two giants and these various other egos as they bump like bumper cars in the middle of a, in the middle of a display case. So,
all right. Well, you get what you pay for, ladies and gentlemen, as they say. All right, Douglas Dietrich, thank you very much for coming on. And we'll see you after the Easter weekend, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening.